Hey, it's Luke Black, proud owner of The Marketplace. Since 1980, we've been your neighborhood sandwich shop. We're open Monday through Saturday for breakfast and lunch. If you're craving a fresh sandwich, salad, soup, or a hot cup of local roasted coffee, we've got it all made fresh daily. The Marketplace can cater your next event, from small office lunches to full wedding parties. You can rent our space for private gatherings after hours. You can find The Marketplace at 246 Olmsted Boulevard in Pinehurst. It's not just a sandwich, it's an experience.
This is Jim Nash, small business and homeowner in Pinehurst. Recently, a number of Pinehurst citizens have seen the need to form a new initiative called We the People Declare. Website, wethepeopledeclare.com. We support citizens who value freedom, ethical governance, and community integrity. We will ensure our governance faithfully serves the public's interests, maintains open communication, accountability, and transparency. Get involved. Visit wethepeopledeclare.com and sign up to stay informed.
This is Taking Aim, a weekly show hosted by David Hensley and Stephen Woodward. Join us for open season on hypocrisy, deception, woke culture, and uniparty cronies. We'll review the stories you might have missed and prepare you for what's to come in the week ahead. Taking Aim starts right now.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to your favorite Saturday morning program, heard exclusively here on WEEB. We're Taking Aim, and I'm Steve Woodward. Welcome back. We have a very intense show for you this morning with several conversations. I want to start, as I always do, by acknowledging our fabulous sponsors, The Marketplace Restaurant and Catering, since 1980, your go-to for breakfast and lunch selections, house-made items, house-made soup, delicious choices, as well as a full menu of catering options for the smallest intimate office gathering or the wedding of the century. That's The Marketplace Restaurant and Catering. And We the People Declare, a citizen watchdog group, which is keeping an eye on all things Pinehurst and across Moore County. Go to wethepeopledeclare.com to learn what they're doing and how you can participate in that. Coming up in a moment, we will be having conversations with both of the candidates for the Moore County Board of Commissioners in District 3, Curtis Self and Cameron Dockery. And then later in the show, we will have a discussion with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, U.S. Army retired, and a man who had a fascinating military career in service to our country, and today is a part of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. So you'll be hearing from General Boykin coming up a little later, and he'll be here in Pinehurst on February 26th, speaking at CCNC. You can go to Ticketmy Sandhills or the James Holzhauser Speaker Series website to purchase your tickets, and do so before they are all accounted for. Well, as we do each week, we're going to start with an abbreviated but nonetheless important acknowledgement of our choice for public enemy number one. In this case, I guess I should say numero uno, because it is, in fact, that clown that appeared for 12 or 13 minutes inside the Levi's Stadium during Super Bowl 60. That would be, I believe his name is Benito, but he likes to be called Bad Bunny. And boy, did he live up to the billing, because the show could not have been worse during the midst of Super Bowl 60. You can say what you want about choreography and who the other vocalists were, some of them quite legitimate people like Lady Gaga. You can say what you want about those things, the aesthetic of it, but some people like the fact that the trees were real. I don't know if that matters or not, but the Bad Bunny, the Bunster, at the end of the day, what matters the most is that not only did he perform exclusively in Spanish, which, you know, for some people is really cool and hip and everything, but when they translated the lyrics of what he was performing, it could not have been more vulgar, more profane, more inappropriate for a large swath of the audience, which includes a lot of kids, both live and on television, of course, television being the focus. But any number of the words and phrases he used would normally get an individual and a network major fines and admonitions from the Federal Communications Commission. I don't know why this is an exception, except I'm sure they're afraid of being accused of racism or some other ridiculous charge like that. But it was an abomination, and the only thing was worse, and what brings us to public embarrassment, number one, was the reaction by any number of media outlets, including, you know, the usually middle-of-the-road Wall Street Journal, and, of course, the usual suspects, the New York Times, the Washington Post, which is soon to be called the Washington Past, because they're laying off people as by the hundreds every other month, it seems like. But and of course your TV outlets, your Joe Scarboroughs, and these other clowns on the View, the ladies of the View, singing the praises of this reprehensible performance, which caused about 50 million live stream views of the alternative Turning Point USA All American halftime show featuring Kid Rock. They blew up the YouTube channel that afternoon, setting all kinds of streaming records. And believe me, this year they had about 2 months to pull this show together with a full year to get ready for next year's halftime. I can assure you that Turning Point show is going to be on steroids a year from now, and will cause the NFL and its advertisers great consternation, which of course is the whole point. Not only was the media salivating over Bad Bunny, but our very, well, not ours, but a state senator up in Greensboro, Michael Garrett, apparently was so excited by the Bad Bunny performance that he reeled off a Facebook post that went on for many, many paragraphs and has gone now what they call viral. The pretense of his praise for the Bad Bunny and his what they called emotional tribute. That was the News and Observer. It was an emotional tribute. He says that the Bunny delivered something other than the usual sanitized English-only version that small and frightened people, you know, like normal Americans, try to sell us. He said the messy, beautiful, multilingual, multicolored, courageous performance is one that has always been built by hands that speak every language and pray in every tongue and come from every corner of this hemisphere. So there you have it. That sounds like a something out of the pages of the United Nations handbook. But again, you can say what you want about the aesthetics or the overall production value of the show, which was not very good, but it was the vulgarity and the disregard for FCC restrictions on profanity during a nationally televised network event. Think about that. And it's fine with the NFL, and I guess it's fine with NBC, of course. They're woke as can be. And it's certainly fine, apparently, with the FCC. And now we're joined by Curtis Self, who is a candidate for the Moore County Board of Commissioners in District 3. He is a Moore County native, a resident of Robbins. And Curtis, thank you for coming in. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Chatting with Curtis, we discovered that he is currently a sports journalist.
Yes.
And in a previous lifetime, back before the age of social media, I was also a sports journalist. And so we'll have some more to talk about it later, I guess. But also, you may have read some of Curtis's work in the Sandhill Sentinel, where he is a reporter covering various beats. He has previously owned other small businesses in the area. And why don't you just give us an overview, Curtis, of what is motivating you to run for this seat? I know some of the commissioners very well, and I know they spend a lot of time as commissioners when there aren't meetings taking place. A lot of the work is done away from the meeting room.
Right.
So what's driving you to get involved in this?
My love for the county. Mr. Ritter is not seeking another seat. So there's an opening. I've always wanted to serve my community. So I figured this was a good time to step up, throw my name in the hat, and run for commissioner. I'm born and raised here, so my love for Moore County, my passion for Moore County runs deep, and there's no better way to show it than to serve.
Of course, the commissioners control the purse strings,
right?
Which is their principal job, in my view, an important one, of course. But there's also other objectives that fall to the Board of Commissioners, which are very significant to the quality of life of the people who live here. And the fixation that so many people have these days, especially those who've been here for a while, who are either natives or have lived here for several decades, there's a fixation with the concerns about growth, population growth.
Yes.
It's pretty much of an organic phenomenon. You can't really regulate it. People are going to move to places where they find a good quality of life,
right?
Good cost of living,
right?
Reasonable cost of living, available and affordable real estate, and you know, obviously, Moore County delivers on all of those. But as a commissioner, how do you view this broad topic of growth? I read in one of the interviews you did that you said your focus would be on growing the right way. How do you define that?
It's more about smart growth. We have different infrastructure issues throughout the county, and it's not stopping growing. We're going to grow. It's just managing how we do it, when we do it, where we do it. Moore County currently has a water issue, and it's just going to get worse as time goes on. So we need to figure the water issue out. Up until 6 months ago, I didn't have internet service in Robbins. So we went and spent 2 years where we moved to without any kind of internet service. So there's all kinds of different infrastructure issues throughout the county that needs to be worked on before we decide, hey, let's put a housing development here. We need to make sure that that area can handle the children for the schools, can handle the roads. There's water that can make it. And so, I mean, just we need to just focus on smart, slow growth.
And the reality of the matter is, and this is often kind of overlooked, I think, when people start wringing their wrists about overpopulation, you know, the municipalities at the end of the day control the development.
Yes.
So if you're driving up Morganton Road in Southern Pines and you see that massive apartment complex, you can go and complain to the commissioners or the state senator or representative.
Right.
But ultimately, you know, 10 people sitting in a town council meeting are the ones who ultimately approve those projects.
Right.
But that being said, what can the commissioners do to collaborate with these village councils to make sure that everybody is sort of singing out of the same hymn book, as they say?
Yeah, I mean, we all just have to get on the same page and meet together and, you know, talk and discuss everything. You know, at the end of the day, the municipalities are going to be able to make their own decisions. But if we've got to work together and support each other because of the water issues and the schools issues and overcrowding in the schools and everything, we just all got to come together and work together.
And that you mentioned schools, and that of course is an area that also is directly impacted by the commissioners, because they will ultimately allocate quite a bit of the
yes.
funding for school expansion, and school expansion is coming.
Yes.
And of course, you know, we see these school boards that sort of default to wanting to build the most expensive, gold-plated, mm-hmm. State-of-the-art school, regardless of cost or practicality, which is not to say that, you know, we shouldn't be building quality schools, but a lot of the core of education is not so much in the bricks and mortar, but in the teaching and in the ideology behind the teaching,
right?
And of course, in the discipline of the children as well. But what do you think is the principal challenge going forward for the commissioners in the coming year? You mentioned water supply analysis. We've got a growing tax base, so there shouldn't be a revenue problem.
Right, right. Yeah, like you said, yeah, we got a lot of families coming in, and the housing development is going huge, so tax income is looking pretty good for the next few years, I believe.
So let's talk about water for a minute. I know, you know, people's eyes may glaze over when they hear about water supply, but, you know, let's face it, go to communities around the country that are facing a crisis when it comes to supplying, you know, what comes through your faucet
right.
when you turn it on, which we take for granted, and tell them that it's not a big deal. In fact, just in the past few days, we have seen that this environmental protection kind of organization called Unique Places to Save has somehow managed to convince the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission to start taking steps toward the demolition of the High Falls Dam. Now, I can assure you that there are many, many people who live in Moore County who couldn't find High Falls on a map and didn't know there was a dam. But what does this one project portend for water management in the future? It seems to me that this is running against the best interests of the citizens.
Yeah, High Falls presents, with a dam being there, a good spot for future Moore County water. It's an unlimited supply of water, and it's in our county. I don't want to speak about the dam really being taken out. I personally am against it. I lived in High Falls for a few years, and, you know, we care about that landmark up our way in Moore County. And that could potentially cost hundreds of millions of dollars to the county with that dam being gone.
Hundreds of millions?
I believe so.
That's nothing to sneeze at, as they say. Obviously, you know, this is going to be... this is going to, again, fall to the commissioners in the coming years to fight this fight, both in the case of this dam and other issues pertaining to water supply and water access and preservation of sources of our water. So, Curtis, folks, we're talking to Curtis Self, who is a candidate for the Moore County Board of Commissioners in District 3. And that seat is open this time around because Commissioner Ritter opted not to seek re-election, and that has brought into the fray Curtis Self and Cameron Dockery as candidates in the primary. And I guess I should mention while we're at it that early voting has begun as of February 12 and will continue through the 28th of February. And then, of course, don't forget there's actually an election day, too, at the end of all of this on March the 3rd. And that will be at the various locations assigned to you by your precinct location. During early voting, however, you will be choosing between one of two locations, the Agriculture Center in Carthage and the Rec Center at Lake Aberdeen off of Highway 1. And so... be aware of the opportunities to vote in the coming days. Okay, the last thing I want to talk to you about in the short time we have remaining is the topic of subdivision expansion. Mm-hmm. Now, we've seen the apartments going up.
Right.
But, and maybe those are technically subdivisions, but when we think of subdivisions, we think of homes
right.
and cul-de-sacs and density. Where do you see that going in the future? We're going to have to accommodate people moving here. They're not all going to want to live in apartments.
Right. Yeah. And I personally would like to see on an acre of land, you being able to get 2 to 3 homes at the most. you know, these areas that are doing a quarter acre per home. I'm not a fan of that. You know, we still got rural areas in our county that want to stay rural. And so putting four homes on acre land, that's just, that doesn't work for everybody. We just have to look at every town and, or every municipality or around there and see what they can handle.
So in other words, be deliberate and plan accordingly.
Right. Yeah.
And that's what the commissioners do when they're doing their jobs well. That's the outcomes that we get.
Yeah.
Curtis Self, we thank you very much for joining us today on Taking Aim, and best of luck in your campaign.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Joining us now is Cameron Dockery. He is a candidate for the District 3 seat on the Moore County Board of Commissioners. Good morning, Cameron. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
We appreciate your time very much. Election is coming up on March 3rd, along with several other races. But between now and then, early voting is underway at two locations, at the Agriculture Center in Carthage and the Recreation Center off of Highway 1, next to Lake Aberdeen. And that's running daily from now until the 28th of February, including early voting from 8 to 3 p.m. on Saturday, the 21st and 28th. Cameron Dockery has been a pastor for over 43 years now. He had his first pastoral assignment at the age of 22, and today is the pastor at the First West End Church. And in addition to that, in 2022, he was elected the mayor of Robbins. Congratulations on that. And thank you for taking the time to come in and also for making the commitment to running for this seat. Tell us a little bit, Cameron, about what motivates you to run, to become a commissioner, and all the time commitment involved there. And also a little bit about the experiences you've had and the achievements that you have chalked up as mayor of Robbins.
Thank you. As mayor, I was asked to run. A previous mayor had resigned before his term was up, and I ran for an election, and I finished out his term. And I'm second year into the second term, gives me 4 years. And I was asked to run, and I thought about it. My wife and I prayed together over it, and we entered the race and were elected. And I think there's a lot of things we can celebrate. The town had just hired a new manager a little while before I was elected. And I've been telling people on the campaign trail at all these meetings that we had $467,000 in our cash reserve when he was hired, and I was shortly elected thereafter. And during that time, for the last 4 years, these are some of the things we celebrate. We have hired employees. We've raised all salaries. We've created an environment that attracted new business. Buildings that once sat empty are now filled. We have attracted the firearms dealer or manufacturer that's come out just outside the town limits and tapped into our infrastructure, OA, firearms manufacturing. We have chalked up all these wins while cutting taxes every year and grown that cash reserve to $3 million, and we celebrate that. It was not easy to do. We did that through, we cut out a lot of waste. We were able to get efficient with technology, and we received a lot of grants to get that done. And that's how we got to where we are.
So a pro-growth strategy in a town that was in desperate need of growth.
Absolutely. NAFTA had gutted all those textile jobs, had gone away. The chicken processing plant had gone. And jobs just left, and then the people started leaving, and now they're coming back. We facilitated 47 brand new townhomes being built in the town limits. As we speak, they're under construction. And I celebrate that they're going to come in around $225,000 to purchase, around $1,400 a month if someone wants to rent one. And that's affordable housing. In Moore County these days, that is not out of reach. I have a lot of young couples come to me and say, where college grads come back home and can't qualify for a $400,000 mortgage, what do we do? That's one of the answers that we've had.
And You know, one of the topics that seems to be top of mind here in Moore County in recent years, and for good reason, is this discussion of growth, population growth, infrastructure growth, commercial development, and residential growth. All of it happening seemingly at warp speed and very abruptly and very, very aggressively. Speaking as a candidate for the Board of Commissioners, how do you view this this phenomenon of growth, and what is do you believe is the proper role of the commissioners? Because a lot of it is organic. You can't just stop it. You can't right. control it. It's going to happen. So what is the proper role of the commissioners in managing it?
I think the answer, that's a good question, and the answer is initially found in our land use management plan and our UDO. And I've talked to farmers, and I've talked to developers. I've talked to everyone. I've talked to lawyers. I've talked to real estate agents. And I've talked to anyone you can talk to try to formulate a plan. And I'm all for building housing within and around the municipalities. 11 mayors of Moore County come together to defend the ETJ, the extraterritorial jurisdiction. And I've guarded that, and I've taken some heat for it. And the reason is if we build in the municipality and around the municipality, that will let the farmland be the farmland. I am for building houses that people can afford, but I'm not for mowing down hay and cutting corn and pouring concrete. I'm not for invading the urban. I'm not for invading the farmland at all. And so I support the UDO and the land use plan. And that's what I would, the guidelines I would use to facilitate that. Our current Board of Commissioners has not approved a new development for a new neighbor housing neighborhood, and I think it's several years now. And so I'm in line with that.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, hand-in-hand with the population growth and the overall expansion of this greater community of Moore County, will be the challenges around the topic of water access and management. You know, we saw the report recently where this environmental organization has come along and they have convinced an entity here in the state to close the High Falls Dam, or so they say they will get it closed. I think there's a lot of debate yet to be had about that. But on that topic alone, I can only imagine that closing this dam and possibly threatening this water supply is not a positive for the citizens of this county in the long run.
That's a tough question, and it takes a lot of research, and I have been in the middle of it. And water's been a problem in Moore County for a long time, for decades now. We're sitting on 125 million gallon reservoir in Robbins. I've been involved on the town level and in conversations with the county for the last three of those years I've served about the water issue. And I'm ready to step into the seat and the saddle and sit at the table and be involved in those conversations. As far as the High Falls Dam goes, man, that is a polarizing subject. I've been to the meetings that were absolutely ugly. Yes, we need water in Moore County. Where are we going to find it? As a conservative Republican, as a conservative individual, what do you do when someone else owns property? You know, someone has purchased that dam and they own it. How can the county take that? That's going to be a legal battle, and I'll wait and see how that fleshes out. Are they going to take it by means of eminent domain? I don't know. I just know what you read in the paper, that they have received the final clearance to take down the dam. How are they going to move forward without access to the dam? I don't know that. But I know this. I am for preserving every ounce of water in the county we can get and securing our future for that.
Mm-hmm. The entity we're talking about is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. And I have been told that there is still, shall we say, a lot of water yet to go over the dam on this topic.
It is.
Before it will be resolved. And
it is.
One of the things that has become quite popular in your community and has lent itself to some excellent fundraising is your Carthage Robins softball game.
Yes.
Which I believe you were the one who said, we need to have a softball game. How's that going?
It's going great. I grew up in a small community above Level Cross. Our school was 1 through 12 when I was in the first grade, and it was a farming community, and no one had any money there at that time. And so on Saturday afternoons, the parents would go up to the ball field, and they'd play softball, and the kids would play. And it was a great, wholesome time, and I wanted to create that environment again. And I learned that years ago, that River League and that textile league softball you had in this community was a big deal. All these mills had their ball teams, and it was a big deal. And I wanted to play some ball. So I talked about it for a little over a year. Then I got with my good friend, Jimmy Chalfinch, and we mapped out a way to play this game. And we've done it 2 years now. The first year, it drew a big crowd. We raised some money, and a few thousand dollars went to our Ellie Jean project, that we're park we're going to build in Robins this summer. And Robins won that game. And then we've come back for the second year, and we played again here at the in the Carthage facilities. And we played, and we raised a few thousand dollars. And it was then their fundraiser. They gave those funds to the Women's Resource Center. And we were fortunate. We won the game 2 years in a row now. And I've been told they're coming after it next fall. So it is a lot of fun. It creates a lot of buzz. From about September till we play in November, everyone talks about the ball game. We have fun with it.
Well, you have, and you've laid down the gauntlet out on the field there, so they're coming for you.
They're coming for it.
So I'm sure you all will be ready. We're talking to Cameron Dockery. He's a candidate for the Moore County Board of Commissioners, District 3, Mayor of Robins. We have just a short time left in our conversation, but just a reminder to everyone that early voting is underway. Cameron, just a few final thoughts about why you're running.
I'm running to take what I've learned serving as mayor, and I think we've racked up a lot of success, to the county level. I'm running on the water problem. That's why I'm first preserving water in Moore County. I'm running on quality of life, to borrow words from Frank Quist. What looks like quality in Robins looks differently in Pinehurst, and I'm for having quality of life in both places and letting the municipalities and the ETJ determine that. Third thing I'm running on is a big one, addiction. I'm a minister, have been for years. I've seen addiction steal, kill, and destroy, ravage families, and take lives. And I want to bring a faith-based solution to the addiction problem. We cannot arrest ourselves out of it. I've talked with our sheriff, many officers, and all of our commissioners. We have right now serving five. They all support Teen Challenge, and I'm a big fan of Teen Challenge and desire to bring a network of churches also into that fellowship to address the addiction problem. And also mental health is a big issue with that. That's my platform.
Well, Cameron, we thank you very much for coming in, and we wish you the best in your campaign going forward.
Thank you.
We will be right back after a message from our sponsors with our conversation with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. So stay tuned.
Hey, it's Luke Black, proud owner of The Marketplace. Since 1980, we've been your neighborhood sandwich shop. We're open Monday through Saturday for breakfast and lunch. If you're craving a fresh sandwich, salad, soup, or a hot cup of local roasted coffee, we've got it all made fresh daily. The Marketplace can cater your next event, from small office lunches to full wedding parties. You can rent our space for private gatherings after hours. You can find The Marketplace at 246 Olmsted Boulevard in Pinehurst. It's not just a sandwich, it's an experience.
This is Jim Nash, small business and homeowner in Pinehurst. Recently, a number of Pinehurst citizens have seen the need to form a new initiative called We the People Declare. Website, wethepeopledeclare.com. We support citizens who value freedom, ethical governance, and community integrity. We will ensure our governance faithfully serves the public's interests, maintains open communication, accountability, and transparency. Get involved. Visit wethepeopledeclare.com and sign up to stay informed.
Where is your song for the world?
Joining us now is Lieutenant General William Jerry Boykin, U.S. Army retired. General, good morning and thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you very much. I'm delighted to be with you.
We are now on the countdown to General Boykin's appearance here in Pinehurst. That will be on Thursday, February 26th, as part of the James E. Holzhauser Jr. Speaker Series. That event is taking place at the Country Club of North Carolina on the 26th, beginning at 5 p.m. I would recommend highly that you attend to hear from the general. You can purchase your tickets online by going to jhspeakerseries.com, JH as in James Holzhauser, speakerseries.com, and you'll be able to buy all of your tickets right there in one visit. General Boykin has an illustrious military career, and we're going to talk about some of that. We were just discussing prior to coming on the air that we are both Virginia Tech Hokies, so that's I always enjoy coming into contact with another fellow Hokie from beautiful Blacksburg, Virginia. Getting back to the forthcoming appearance in Pinehurst, the general will be addressing the nation's response to current events, and his presentation will provide us with an understanding of today's global challenges through the values, faith, and principles that unite America. General Boykin served for over 30 years in national defense and special operations, including as a founding member of Delta Force and a former deputy undersecretary of defense for intelligence. And now you will see him speaking all over the country on leadership, national security, and American values. He is also the author of several fiction and nonfiction books, including his memoir, Never Surrender, A Soldier's Journey to the Crossroads of Faith and Freedom. And in addition to all of that, General Boykin is the executive vice president with the Washington, D.C.-based Family Research Council. And, General, why don't we start off by asking you to describe briefly the work of the Family Research Council and your role in particular.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. We are a Christian organization here in Washington, D.C. We were created by Dr. Dobson when he wanted to have a presence here in the Capital Region, so that he could lobby Congress and influence to the best possible the things that were happening within the Congress. So that's the origin of us. And now today we have moved on to actually having influence now with pastors around the country, doing what we can for them and with them, and using them to help with things that we're trying to get done. And several media outlets that we're associated with that we do things here. We do podcasts. We do all kinds of things, and I don't speak the terminology correctly as to say exactly what it is, but it's media broadcasts that come out of here every day, and we do as much as we can to try and provide people a better understanding of families. And families is one of our primary targets, if you will. Because the family structure in America, as I think most people know, is having some trouble, and it has been for quite a while, and we're trying to do our part to bring that back to where it needs to be.
Yes, that is sort of the one of the cores that that holds together our country. And well, thank you for the work you're doing there. Let's turn our attention to some of the topics that you'll be touching on when you when you're here on February 26th. Of course, you were 36 years in the United States Army, and that took you to leading military operations all over the world in Iran and in Grenada and Panama and many other places. But right now, we are seeing the United States, I think to some degree, regaining a global leadership role, and that's affecting current events in places such as Venezuela, certainly Israel, Ukraine, and also maybe most importantly, Iran. What would you like to focus on in the time we have remaining?
Yeah, well, let me say this, that what I intend to talk about when I get there is probably four things, and that is the Russia issue in terms of their unwillingness to sign a peace agreement that would stop this war with Ukraine. And the Ukraine is probably just as stubborn. So I want to talk about that a little bit. And what people need to do is look into the background and understand what this is all about between Russia and Ukraine. And that is because the Ukraine and Russia at one time were one, is the bottom line. They were one nation. Mm-hmm. They were one tribe, if you will. But in 1991, they were separated by a event that took place there, which was they declared sovereignty. That being the Ukraine declared sovereignty, and the Russians agreed to it. And now, you know, this many years later, the Russians are saying, no, we're one nation. We're one nation. So we'll talk about that a little bit. The other thing I want to do is talk about Israel. And I must tell you, so that everybody understands, during my time on active duty, I lived for a period of time in Israel with the Golani Brigade. And I was there to try and find so we could rescue some American hostages that were being held over in Lebanon. But I became very close to the commander of the battalion that I was there with. And ultimately he was killed by Hezbollah. And that was when I said, I have skin in this game. And I have last year, in the spring of last year, I went back over to Israel. I've been to Israel many times, but at the request of the governor of Judea and Samaria, which is otherwise known as the West Bank, they asked us to come over and help them with some things that I'll talk about when I get out there regarding getting with their Knesset and trying to persuade their Knesset to do certain things. And again, I'll talk about those when I get there. And then I also expect to talk about Iran and talk about the night that I stood in the desert there and saw eight good men die as a result of the thing that we were doing, which was we launched an operation to try and go into the U.S. Embassy in Tehran and rescue 52 Americans who were being held by the followers of the Ayatollah Khomeini and about 100 miles from the embassy late at night on the night of the 20th of April, 1980, in Tehran, or very close to Tehran, I should probably say. And I was part of the Delta Force team that went in to rescue our American hostages there, all 52 of them, out of the U.S. Embassy and bring them home to their freedom. And I saw that night, a terrible tragedy occurred, and eight good Americans, eight patriotic Americans, died that night. And I watched them, and let me tell you, that left a mark on me. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit too. And then I may talk about anything that the people are interested in that I could provide something for. So that's where I stand in terms of what I intend to do when I get out there, to get down there, I guess I should say, to where you are.
Well, you mentioned Iran, and obviously, you know, for many years, various administrations have failed to address the threat of Iran as the really the largest sponsor of terrorism in the world. And it seems to me that we now have an administration that is committed to staring down Iran. And obviously we saw the successful bombing mission to take out their nuclear capabilities. But how do you see that this story unfolding going forward?
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because I just talked to some people that are foreign policy experts, and just yesterday, as a matter of fact, and they see Tehran falling within the next few months. In fact, one of them said by midsummer, he thinks that this thing will be passed, and he says he thinks that the Shah, or the Shah's son, obviously Reza Pahlavi, will be back in power, and he will be setting up a democratic form of government there. So that's coming from someone that I trust. So we'll see.
And of course, as important as the fall of Tehran is, the fact that there is a person and an entity there to fill the vacuum and assume the leadership is equally important, because a lot of times in these situations, you go from one dictatorial government to another, and it really doesn't change anything.
I think you're absolutely right. One of the precursors has to be for U.S. support is that the Shah will set up a government and make the way to have a representative government. And you can look at that as a democracy. And it cannot be a Islamic republic. There's no such thing. So that's what the Shah has got to be looking at right now before this thing does fall, in the event that he is the one that comes back in to try and restore government.
Let's, in the time we have remaining, let's pivot to real quickly Venezuela, because that's sort of has been top of mind lately. And for reasons that elude me, a lot of the American media seem to be shocked and appalled that the United States would go in and remove a ruthless dictator and somebody who was directing a massive drug trafficking operation around the world, directly affecting the safety and well-being of Americans. How do you view the both the action that was taken to remove Maduro, but also what lies ahead for Venezuela, and what role the United States should have in the future of Venezuela?
Yeah, that's a good question. Listen, first of all, America doesn't do some things very well, and nation building is one of them. Mm-hmm. But that said, we've got to go back and reflect on the fact that Maduro was killing Americans with all the drugs that he was shipping into America. He was killing Americans. And the reality was, when the president ordered this to be done, that's exactly what was in his mind, is I'm going to stop the killing of Americans by a guy that has been given every opportunity to do something about this and to stop doing what he's doing. And therefore, we're going to bring him down. And I will tell you, in my years, I spent 13 years in the Delta Force, and I've never seen an operation that went as smoothly as this one did. And that says a lot for the leadership under Donald Trump, because we were headed in such an incredibly bad direction in our previous president that I'm not sure that that we could have done this during that administration.
Yeah, that's apparent. And, you know, I think the going hand in hand with what you just said is we're seeing this resurgence of not only the respect around the world for the United States and its military, but also at home we're seeing a return to very robust recruiting of future men and women who are longing to wear the uniform. I imagine that is very encouraging to you, given your lifetime of dedication.
Yeah, very much so. And, you know, in 1962, Douglas MacArthur stood up in the West Point mess hall and made his famous speech. Now, when he finished, he looked at all the cadets there, Army cadets, and he said, "Your mission remains fixed, determined, inviolable. It is to win the nation's wars." And you know what? That has never changed, never changed. What changed was the leadership. And we had leadership that wanted to use the military as lab rats. They wanted to use the military for everything it was not created to be. And and our military got more concerned about pronouns than they did about whether you could put steel on target at 100 yards. So I am just delighted. And I think that the combination of Hegseth as well as the president is a very good combination. And I'll tell you, the things that I've seen him doing, both the president as well as Pete Hegseth, I'm very delighted with, and I think that it's exactly what's needed at this time.
Well, General Boykin, it has been an honor to have you join us on our program today. We are very much in anticipation of your appearance here in Pinehurst on Thursday, February 26th. Folks, I'm going to remind you that's at 5 p.m. at the Country Club of North Carolina. I direct you to jhspeakerseries.com to purchase your tickets. And it should also be noted that available for purchase after the general's appearance will be his autobiography, Never Surrender, A Soldier's Journey to the Crossroads of Faith and Freedom. General, thank you very much for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you soon.
Well, thank you very much, too.
Well, as always, we thank all of you for sharing Saturday mornings with us. For David Hensley, I'm Steve Woodward. We're back next Saturday exposing deception, corruption, and rhino imposters doing what we do best, taking aim.